Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inside the Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Monson. I'm your host for today. Today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Tyler R. Tischler. He is the author of King Arthur's Children, A Study in Fiction and Tradition. As we know, there are many legends around King Arthur, and we will have the opportunity to find out from Tyler what all his research revealed. Did King Arthur really exist? Did he have children? Are the descendants of King Arthur that are living today? Please stay tuned, because we're about to find out. However, just first, a little bit about Tyler. Tyler R. Tischler, Ph.D., has been in love with the Arthurian legend since he first read The Boy's King Arthur by Sidney Lanier with N.C. Wyatt's illustrations, and he credits Marion Zimmer's Bradley's The Mists of Avalon with making him realize the potential for writing new horizons of the legend. Although Tyler considers himself a novelist first and a scholar second, he wrote his master's thesis on the Arthurian legend as a way to accomplish the research necessary for the Arthurian novel he was simultaneously writing. A chapter of his master's thesis was published as Creating King Arthur's Children, A Trend in Modern Fiction, in the spring 1999 issue of Arthuriana. Although his tutorial studies at Western Michigan University led him to focusing on British Gothic 19th century novels, and his love for his hometown of Marquette, Michigan, resulted in his publishing a series of historical fiction and nonfiction books set in Upper Michigan, including the popular The Marquette Trilogy and My Marquette. His love for the Arthurian legend has never died as he continues to research, write, and dream of King Arthur. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
I'm glad to be talking to you. This has been quite an undertaking that you've done on King Arthur's Children, and I like the subtitle of it, too, A Study in Fiction and Tradition. Like, is King Arthur for real? Is he just a legend? Is he folklore, or did he actually exist?
Well, that's an excellent question, Irene, and that's one that scholars have been debating for centuries, really. My take on it, and most scholars' take on it, is that there probably was somebody, a historical personage, in about late 5th, early 6th century, who we could claim was probably the historical person behind King Arthur. He probably wasn't a king. He might have been some sort of a warlord, a military leader. What we do know is that the Romans left Britain about 410 A.D., and the result of that is the Roman Empire was crumbling, so they had to go back closer to Rome to hold on to what they could, and they left Britain exposed to invasion by the Saxons, the Angles, the Jutes, like the Norsemen, what later would be considered Vikings. And they came into what we know today as England. In fact, England is named for the Angles. And they invaded and started to attack the British people and push them into what eventually would become Wales and Cornwall and up into Scotland. But there was a period for about 20 or so years when it seems like that invasion got forestalled. And so we think that that time frame is when King Arthur probably lived, that there probably was some military leader among the British people that was able to stop the invaders, or at least make peace with them for a time period. And that's kind of what became eventually the idyllic Camelot period.
Mm-hmm. I find that interesting what you had just said, because I'm doing genealogy, and I'm finding my husband's genealogy extremely interesting, and from the research that I have done, that others have done also, and I picked up on theirs, is that Cerdic, the king of Wessex, is my husband's 48th great-grandfather, and you also mention him in your book, and so there's just like, was he a relative of King Arthur? was he a child, or was he just somebody that, you know, dueled against him? And so there seems to be some confusion. And then now, after what you had just said, I'm even wondering if there was such a person as Sir Dick, the King of Wessex.
Yeah, we think he was most likely a historical person. I consider him one of my ancestors, too, when I go way back, and he's the ancestor of the current British royal family. Geoffrey Ashe, who was one of the big scholars in the Arthurian legend, was, I believe, the first person to propose that he may have been the son of a warlord who we think is the basis of King Arthur. And the reason for that is because his name is not an Anglo-Saxon name. It's actually more of a Celtic name. So it's questionable why would his father, who was a Saxon, name his son with a more of a Celtic or British name. And so we think that may have had something to do with it.
Well, you had just mentioned that, the current royal family is supposedly a descendant. So I would assume that there have been records, you know, a lot of times. And when I'm, let's say, doing my own genealogy, my records basically stop at what my parents could remember, because there was really, at some point, there were really no records, or they were kept in churches and the churches were burnt down. But I just assumed that when I was doing the genealogy that this part was probably correct because of the records that probably the royalty kept. But now I'm, you know, from what I'm hearing from you, it's possibly not correct.
Well, the English royal family has been trying to claim descent from King Arthur for hundreds of years, and a lot of times back in the Middle Ages, genealogies were manipulated just to try to claim a descent from somebody famous so that you then could claim that you had the right or the power to rule over a country. The link with Cerdic, if he were King Arthur's son, he would be probably the best claim to having a descent from King Arthur. And he eventually was King of Wessex, which went down through Alfred the Great, and then eventually the House of Wessex married into the Norman people, the William the Conqueror, who invaded England and basically took over in 1066. His son Henry married one of the Anglo-Saxon princesses. So then the House of Wessex line ran down and through the Norman line and into the Plantagenet family. And so about that time in the 1100s, the whole King Arthur legend really surfaced and began to be written down. And the royal family tried to make several claims of being related to King Arthur under the reign of King Edward I, for example, which would be like the late 1200s. He had a round table made, which today hangs in Winchester, in the hall in the city of Winchester. Later, King Henry VIII had the table painted, and he had a illustration of King Arthur put on the table with Henry VIII's face basically on it so that he could claim that he looked like King Arthur. So are they legitimately descended from King Arthur? Not necessarily, but they made these political moves to try to claim that they had some connection there.
Well, I don't know if I want to hear that or not, Tyler. I mean, this was pretty something when I found out that, you know, my husband's 48th great-grandfather was actually the King of Wessex, and now you're telling me that maybe that might not be correct.
Well, he was the King of Wessex, yes. Whether or not he was King Arthur's son is where the question is.
Yeah. It's interesting that, and of course, you know, over the hundreds, thousands of years, as this goes on, the stories change, don't they? And people write different stories and different, and it gets to be a point, is what is right and what isn't. So what got you interested in King Arthur in the first place?
I would say probably when I read The Boy's King Arthur, which is like a retelling of Sir Thomas Malory's La Morte Arthur, written for children, and just the wonderful illustrations that N.C. Wyeth did for that book, one of which is the illustration on the cover of my book now. And just the whole drama of the story, mm-hmm. that King Arthur has these great ideals and Camelot's this wonderful place, but you know, then it all falls apart. Lancelot and Guinevere are in love with each other, and it's, you know, it's kind of this forbidden love, and they fight it, and they try to do the right thing, but it just doesn't work out. And Mordred, King Arthur's son, his child born of incest, hates King Arthur as a result, and he kind of steps in and accuses Lancelot and Guinevere, and King Arthur is put in this position where he has to obey the law, and the queen has committed treason, and so she needs to be burned at the stake, and of course Lancelot comes in and rescues her. It's all just a very romantic story, and a tragedy, but a tragedy that at the end has that little bit of hope that King Arthur is going to come back someday. You know, he's supposed to come back in Britain's hour of greatest need, and so there's this little bit of hope left in the tragedy.
You've done a lot of research in your book, this most recent one, The Yet King Arthur's Children, and I was amazed as I was reading through it that the information that you have is fantastic. And I'm just kind of wondering, what is the importance of knowing whether or not King Arthur actually had children?
I would say there's two things there. One is that we can possibly claim that he was a historical person if he had children, and in that case, we can claim a descent from him, because through what we know about genealogy and how the human race has intermarried with different cultures have intermarried with each other, and DNA evidence that we have, we know that probably everybody has a link back to King Arthur. If King Arthur had children, almost everybody could claim that they are descended from him. No matter where in the world you live, whether it's Africa or Asia or Europe or probably even North America, just because enough people, he would have had enough children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, that's probably a possibility. The other thing is just fascinating how the story gets changed over the centuries. He starts out with the earliest Welsh versions. He has three children, and there's no mention of Mordred being his child. And yet later on, Mordred gets into the storyline as his nephew, and then later as his son, this son that is born through incest when King Arthur sleeps with his sister, not knowing that she's his sister. The story evolves, and the storytellers like to come up with interesting little plots and change the characters around just to make the story more interesting. And to me, it's just fascinating how it's all evolved that way. And I think today a lot of the modern novelists are creating children for King Arthur now because, you know, they're tired of this tragic plot, and they need something new to keep the story going. So they're coming up with new ways to change the storyline.
And by adding children and then writing more so about the children.
Yeah, or just changing the characters around, like Mordred. He's the villain most of the time, and a lot of later treatments are trying to make him less of a villain, coming up with new interpretations of some of the other characters, Arthur, Guinevere, Lancelot, and, you know, are they really who they say they are?
And we really don't know, do we?
And we'll be back more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with author Tyler Tischler, and our conversation is about his recent study about King Arthur and his children. As you've heard so far, Tyler is very knowledgeable in this area, and there is more to come, so stay tuned. And, oh, by the way, his website is childrenofarthur.com. So why is it that Mordred is so well-known?
Well, the other children, the earlier versions, they were pretty much written out of the storyline, and nobody seemed to know what really to do with them anyway. The main thing that Mordred's fame rests upon is back in the Welsh stories. There's a line, I think it's in one of the Chronicles, that just says that Arthur and Mordred fell at Camlann. And Camlann was the battle where Arthur is slain and usually goes off to Avalon. But that's sort of the whole source. That Arthur and Mordred died at Camlann. It doesn't say that they fought each other. But later writers decided to interpret that as they were on opposite sides. It's very possible, actually, that they were on the same side. But that they were interpreted as being on opposite sides, and then that would mean Mordred was a villain, since obviously King Arthur was the good guy. So they had to come up with this story about why Mordred would want to fight with King Arthur. And as I said, he starts out being King Arthur's nephew, but then later in later versions, he's turned into Arthur's son, and then they have this whole story of incest that's behind it. And the real tragedy is that Arthur and Guinevere never have any children, so Arthur needs an heir to the throne. And the only child he has is Mordred, who's this child born of incest. And so ultimately, even though he's tried to keep Mordred out of the picture, when no other children are born, he kind of has to accept Mordred. And Mordred is probably the heir, and consequently comes to Camelot and just is not a very nice person, gets himself involved in politics and factions in the court, and eventually just brings about the downfall of the whole thing. And it's Arthur who is this basically right-minded individual, believes in right and doing the right thing, but tries to do the right thing by his son, and it all just backfires on him.
You know, as I'm listening to you, Tyler, you know, these stories, whether they're real or not, are they any different than what our society is now?
There are certain differences. I think that there's a lot more stipulations, codes of conduct, manners, those sorts of things back in the Arthurian legends that we don't have so much today. Just, you know, in the last 50 to 100 years, a lot of the taboos in our society have broken down. But at the same time, that there's still a lot of the same thing, in the sense of, you know, we dream of this having this better society, and that was what King Arthur dreamt of, building this place called Camelot, this better society. And that's, you know, just 50 years ago, President Kennedy was elected, and Camelot the musical was his favorite musical for that reason, and so his administration became known as Camelot. And I don't really think it's much different anymore today. I mean, President Obama is compared to President Kennedy a lot, and the whole, you know, the whole sort of same idea there, that we can build this better society.
And it's interesting that many years ago, and let's say in the King Arthur era, they were thinking, you know, they were wanting to do the same thing as we are now. So, yes, we did progress a lot since that time, but we're still on that same mission.
Yes, yes, we're still on that same mission, and we'll probably always be on that mission. And I think that's why the stories have resonated so much and will keep resonating for centuries to come.
I think so, too. And it's interesting because there are stories that, you know, come and go, but anything to do with King Arthur really has been around for a long time. And what I've also noticed, too, is kids love books about King Arthur or any of the legends around, you know, him or that era. It seems to me that right now it's, you know, vampires and things like that, but also right behind that are the legends of King Arthur. And I'm wondering why it is that the young kids are so enamored with these stories also.
I think there's a lot of magic in the stories. Of course, you have Merlin, the great sorcerer, and so he has magic, and especially recently there's been the Merlin TV series on the BBC, and then it's been on the Sci-Fi Network and NBC here in the U.S. And so, you know, that obviously speaks to that whole idea of magic. Something that I find really interesting about the Merlin TV show is that Merlin comes to Camelot where magic is completely forbidden. And, of course, Merlin has these magic powers, and he has to hide them throughout the time that he's there in Camelot. And so it's really this whole question about how do you be true to yourself and how do you hold on to your real identity when the rest of the world around you doesn't like you or will not understand if they knew who you really truly were. And I think that's something that, you know, children deal with all the time. We have stories about bullying in schools, and you know, just being accepted by your peers, and peer pressure is such a big thing. And so that TV show Merlin, I think, really probably speaks on that level to a lot of children. And what boy especially doesn't want to grow up to be a knight? I mean, that's kind of like the medieval equivalent of being the quarterback for the Green Bay Packers or some sports hero today.
I suppose so. Oh, that's a funny comment. So, do you plan to write more books about King Arthur?
Yeah, actually, I started out with the plan to write a novel about King Arthur. And in doing so, you know, they always say that you don't, the more you study something, the more you find out you don't know about it. And so as I was writing my novel, I kept realizing, oh, well, I should do some more research. And so eventually it led to this book about King Arthur's children. And just doing all this research, I became interested in all these images of King Arthur's children in different kind of obscure texts. And so I kind of wrote them simultaneously. And so I have this novel, a King Arthur novel that I plan to bring out. I'm not quite sure when yet, probably another year or two. But I will have that published, and I'm hoping to turn it into a series and kind of explore the whole issue of King Arthur having descendants, maybe up to the modern day.
Mm-hmm. So in all the research that you did for this particular book that we're talking about today, King Arthur's Children, what was your biggest aha?
I think I thought when I started out that I was doing something maybe a little bit new in terms of the novel that I was going to write, mm-hmm. but I found out that I was not alone. There were all these other novelists who were also digging and finding out about King Arthur's other children. And so that just really, really interested me. And it started out kind of slowly where some of the earliest, more modern novels, like Rosemary Sutcliffe, she wrote Sword at Sunset, and that was probably the first novel that tried to treat King Arthur as a historical person. It got rid of all the magic and the chivalry and just tried to depict him as what he really could have been back in about the early 500s or so. She has King Arthur have a daughter who dies soon after birth. So she didn't really do much else with King Arthur's children. There's a few more novels like that as that book was written back in the late 50s. So there were a few more novels like that in the 60s, 70s, early 80s. But then as time went by, the novelists became a little bit more ambitious in creating these children. And they'd go back and they'd resurrect those names of Arthur's Welsh children and insert them in the books. Or create daughters for King Arthur that actually lived and just somehow got missed in the history books but had significant influences on the Arthurian legend. And it just really showed me how much the legend was something that has survived because each generation reshapes it for their own purposes.
Well, you've got such a passion for this particular era, and it comes out in your book, of course, through the research, but also in just what you had said. So I can hear the passion. I really can. Tyler, tell our listening audience your website address.
The website for this book specifically is childrenofarthur.com, and it has on it all kinds of additional information about King Arthur. There are photos of places in England associated with King Arthur, like Glastonbury and Winchester and Stonehenge, places I've actually visited mostly. There's some artwork of different King Arthur paintings, and which I hope to add to, and there's a couple genealogy charts suggesting information about descendants of King Arthur, and then I have a blog as well.
And I was on that site, and you certainly do have a lot of information on there. Tyler, thanks. It's been a real pleasure for me to talk to you, and I know that our listening audience also just were able to get a little bit more information and become interested in, if these children exist, and to really take a look at the research that you have done. And I really do appreciate you coming on and talking to us.
Oh, thank you, Irene. It's been my pleasure.
And there you go, listeners. We were just talking to Tyler Tischler, and he is the author of The King Arthur's Children, A Study in Fiction and Tradition. And as you have heard, hey, these could be possibilities. He may have had all these children. You just never know. And I know that you'll find it interesting just to read about them and create your own decision. And come back and listen again. This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Bye for now.